got the change of a nickel. Ain't got no bounce in my shoe. Ain't got no fancy to tickle. I ain't got nothing but the blues.
In the Chomedy Podcast, that's all I got. There's the blues, that's my uniform, and the Chomedy Podcast, and that's you and me and everything else. Welcome back to the Chomedy Podcast. Kenneth Allen, that's my name. Kicking off at EMS, that's my game. Gonna have some fun with you tonight. Talk about EMS? All right. I got no sleep. I'm working hard. But I'm really excited about this episode. This is the second episode, and it's by far the best episode that I've put together as of yet. And it's because I'm getting better at this, and I got my favorite teacher on it. Who's that, pray tell? Miss Megan Corey. Megan was my teacher for EMT, and actually I had her for paramedic too 6 years later when I decided to make a career out of emergency medicine. She's one of my favorite teachers and definitely one of my favorite people on the planet and in my life. And I've emulated my bedside manner on the way that she's presented herself and her case studies and the way that she's presented herself to the class at large. Just open-hearted and open-minded to everything. You'll hear it from this. I don't want to give too much away, but man, she's a dynamic person. And you can truly say that without thinking, oh, that's a bullet word. It really does encapsulate Megan. And just that kind of enthusiasm is what you need to keep up in this career, because you get so bogged down and stressed out. And literally, my brain is, it's squash. See that? That's exactly what my brain is. It's incapable right now of making coherent thought. Just one of the many nights it's going to be like this. I was just at work yesterday. I had 20 calls in 24 hours, and my brain was just mush. I haven't slept, and I'm goofy as a badger on bath salts right now. But I'm putting this together. It's been too long for me to be on hiatus. So for all of you people out there listening right now and thinking, wow, he really dedicates himself to the job. I do. And you know where I learned that? Megan Corey. Like NPR.
Oh, totally.
Welcome to All Things Considered. I'm Kenneth Allen.
Hi, let's get close and whisper to the radio.
Except you have to have the Boston accent.
That's right. The refined Boston accent. It's not the, hey, what's happening over there?
Exactly. It's that Harvard.
Yes, the Harvard accent. Okay, well, let's see. Let's try it out. So, this is the Chomedy Podcast. My name is Ken Allen, and I'm here with my very first guest, Megan Corey.
Hello.
How you doing, Megan? Good morning.
I'm doing well.
We're already done with school.
Yep.
You're getting everything squared away.
Yeah, one more day of open skills lab right now. They're back there practicing.
Okay.
Then we have a simulation later when we have our helper Oscar come in, who's our best actor.
Really?
From past classes? Oh, yeah.
You got to
see
Oscar.
Oscar Tadeo. He works at AMR in the city. And
okay.
Big guy is always a great actor, great instructor, actually, natural teacher.
Is he teaching here now, or does he just help out?
He helps out. He helps out, but he helps out a lot.
Yeah, cool.
Yep. He was here last week for our preceptor class, and he was, he played the role of bystander in one case and a patient in another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then he also really gives the students pointers. He's from a recent class from maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Okay, so, Oscar. So yeah. You mentioned preceptor. Let's just say you are the paramedic instructor for City College of San Francisco.
Yep.
Preceptor is involved with becoming a paramedic. Before we get into, well, let's get into that right now. So let's go through what a paramedic is, what it takes to become a paramedic, your prereqs, the course is,
sure,
and everything else that happens along the way.
Well, the paramedic is the highest level of pre-hospital emergency responder. Okay. And licensed.
Pre-hospital,
in terms
right.
of highest level, I mean, that's the most you can go in terms of your license levels.
Right.
So you can start with the emergency medical responder, which used to be called the first responder, and then EMT. Then there's a designation, advanced EMT, and then paramedic. So you have to be an EMT in order to become a paramedic, which is actually, I've found now looking at everything sort of in a larger picture, very unique in medicine. You think about
Why
it,
so?
You don't have to be an LVN
to become a nurse. Right, right.
You know?
Or an LVN to become a nurse. Right, right.
Exactly.
Or an MA or something.
It's interesting because in our case, they actually have to come with an EMT certification.
Right, right.
So that's very unique. And then for us, we like them to have some hands-on experience, at least mostly so that they know what they're getting into. They kind of have an understanding of what they're getting into before they get to that point.
And not only that, but they get a feel of the field. They yep. know their way around an ambulance, and it actually makes it easier for them to become a paramedic. There's less stress yep. on them when they get time yep. to be out of the classroom and actually working in the field or going yep. through their...
And ultimately, the main reason that we started pushing it more so for our program was because the preceptor started pretty much
right.
demanding it. Because they really didn't want to spend so much time teaching them how to operate a gurney and how to change oxygen tanks and run a BLS assessment. Mm-hmm. They wanted them to come already armed with that.
Look at this, our first interrupter of the podcast,
oh,
my
oh,
mother, Mary.
Mary
Ellen. Hi, nice to
hey,
see
Mary.
You.
Good to see you.
Thanks
hey.
To walk in. And
happy holidays.
Say, I like your frog lily pad there.
Thank you.
Always.
He's looking up at the sun.
What are you guys talking about?
Talking about paramedic. What? All right, so far we're at...
That's perfect, because Mary is really the...
Yeah.
The founder at City College of the
sort
paramedic
of,
program,
yeah.
the first
sort
paramedic
of.
Program.
Yep, yeah. yep. Yeah, yeah. And the teacher for coordinator for EMT, which
right.
is what we're at right now.
Right.
In the speech.
In the
little,
spectrum.
In,
yep.
in our shuck and jive.
In the spectrum.
Yeah.
So, good.
Well, Megan is the star. Hand it over to her.
Okay.
And Mary was my instructor,
and,
so.
And
well,
that's the whole point. I take full responsibility because you were my student many years ago.
Okay, it's not your interview yet.
Oh.
At some point we'll get to you.
Very good. Very
yeah,
good.
Okay. So now you've met Mary. You've met Megan. She's going to be wandering around in the background for a while. So, okay. So being a paramedic, so, and then you were saying that the issue was there are EMTs that were not as versed in all the equipment, the skills, the
sure.
techniques, and even not just the devices, but even running a patient assessment.
Exactly. So I've
yeah.
noticed there have been a couple types. So you get people who are incredibly academic, and they come in and they handle the material with really relative ease, including pathophysiology and pharmacology, which are two usual sticking points for students.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get into the clinical setting, and they actually, you know, can go either way. They can perform, you know, fairly well, if, depending upon what they're doing, you know, just skills or assessment, or if they stand back a little bit. And then they get out into the field, and the whole initial part, that whole, am I able to walk in, general impression, big sick or little sick, in a few seconds, just can't do it.
And
it takes so
yet.
Much effort to. Or they're not very hands-on. So early on, we started getting feedback from students. We need more scenarios. We need more, you know, input. And also, the other thing I'd say that we changed is our clinical faculty. They've always been on faculty, which is very unique to the paramedic program.
On faculty, meaning on
meaning
site faculty?
Meaning they're actually City College faculty.
Right.
They're not receiving some stipend or whatever. They are on our faculty, and it's very collaborative. So every shift, they handle four students. They're
mm-hmm.
not working for San Francisco General that day. They're working for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have all the time to dedicate to what the students need.
Mm-hmm.
Pull them aside, do quizzing, pull them aside, let's go look at this patient, divide them up, do whatever. But they also do regular assessments. And then they email me immediately and say,
mm-hmm.
this is how so-and-so did. So another step I took 2 years
feedback.
Ago was I started giving them a a preparation sheet with the students' names and
mm-hmm.
pictures, and also
mm-hmm.
a little narrative.
Mm,
this
really?
Is the background that this student has.
See,
this is where they've been strong so far. My assessment so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then they know what they can go back and look and see, okay, this one, I got to watch out. They're going to try and stand in the back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll
mm-hmm.
look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give them little warnings. You know, you want to make sure this person touches patients or whatever.
Whatever their weakness is, yeah, or exactly. The thing that they're afraid to do.
So it's much more collaborative. That helps for preparation for the field too, because then you know what they need when they go out. Mm-hmm. So that's helped, and then the experience part helps.
So I was in your class. What did my blurb say? No, I'm just
I didn't do it then. I wish I would have. But I got a lot of. Oh, I got a lot of that. We got to keep the nurses away from them with a stick.
Yeah, right. That was Ryan.
You and
we
got to
keep us away from the doctors.
Allen brothers.
Man, we got into so much. I don't even know if I should say the things we got into at
that was a
general.
Fun class.
That was the best time I've had in class.
That was a fun class. Ever. Yep.
But that's what I think. I don't know any other teachers that are doing that are sitting around making lists like that, putting students' names down, telling their points, their strong points. I think that's what makes you such a great teacher, which is why you're on this interview, by the way.
But you know what's interesting that you say that is because the only other teacher I know that does that is Mary. And yet Mary does that about her students to me.
I know.
So that I know what's coming. And that's, I think, the only piece that I'm missing right now is taking it from the EMT program that we have on site. We have them for a whole semester. Mm-hmm. I could be learning from you and from Mary and everything. And then moving them much more seamlessly into the paramedic program.
Yeah, the ones that
that's
you
the next
want.
Step.
That is, yeah. And that's what I want to get to, too. Like, what is the future of this whole program?
Yeah,
Why don't you go in? Okay, so... Paramedic, you do your classroom work, you have the students, they move from working in the classroom, and then what's the next step after that?
Well, we overlap, so that instead of having just classroom, then skills, then clinical, then field, we overlap those first three elements. So the classroom, it's a lot of academic and case review. We do a lot of case review and group study in the spring. And then they have a skills class as well during that spring time. And then at the end of the spring, the summer has always been this sort of standalone cardiac respiratory module.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to pull in skills again in that summer module, because when they come back in the fall, it always seems like they forgot everything. So it's interesting. And they're no longer EMTs, good EMTs either after that monitor comes into it. So I think there's ways we can address that. But in the fall, they come back and we have some academic. What we do is we tip the scales. Mm-hmm. We have some new material in the form of case studies, mm-hmm. but then we also have more skills and simulations. Then we start the sim lab, and that's when they come in. And sim lab is different than skills in that they do full-on team response to, you know, high fidelity simulation or real actors or whatever.
Yeah.
And then also overlapping in that time, they start clinicals. So OR comes first in the summer, and then we start the ED in like August. ICU, pediatrics, psych, you know, wherever else, whatever other things. We try to do some field sites too, like the sobering center, and then sometimes they'll have a tent. Like they have a tent on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I just got an email saying they needed some volunteers to help with that sobering center overnight on New Year's Eve, a couple blocks from General, designed to offset, you know, the whole EDs so that they don't get inundated with people who just need to sober up.
That are just sobering, yeah.
Exactly.
Rather than injured, sober, trauma.
And they had something like that at the World Series parade this year, too. And this year was great when we covered the World Series parade with that emergency response teams, because we were able to work both paramedic and EMT class
so
together.
So with the World Series parade this year, San Francisco Fire had, they were responsible for all the medical issues that occurred during the parade as the Giants were coming from, where'd they come from? To City Hall.
From... I don't know where it was, Financial District or Ferry Building or somewhere down there.
And City College paramedic students were basically running as operating EMTs, and they took under their wing the students from my class, my EMT class, to help them out doing basic first responder things as the paramedic students were doing patient assessments, treatment, and turning them over to paramedics that were actually working the job, San Francisco fire medics or other medics that work in the field here.
And it was a real collaboration, because it's the fire department, the police department, the health department, and then the California, medical. It's the disaster team, DMAT, that comes in and works with the health department. So we had a bank of radios that we'd sign out from the health department. They had a clinic inside Bill Graham Auditorium, which is the best thing. The whole thing doesn't operate unless you have an on-site clinic, because the whole point is to offload the EDs. and to manage stuff, you know, on site.
So you have to have a doctor at the clinic.
Yep.
You have to have somebody who's
a couple doctors. There were some, and then we also had, there was a sobering center in the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was acute care and there was sobering.
Well, that's great.
And then we had the fire department had a line of ambulances at the back of Bill Graham,
mm-hmm.
just in case. So if somebody needed to be transported, that we first funneled them into Bill Graham.
Okay.
So our teams would go out in the madness,
which is
what they wanted.
Yeah. It's the best part of the
job. Exactly. With their radios. And they'd go out there with their
bags.
Are there
people just screaming, I'm lost?
That's, yeah, exactly. I mean,
yeah,
well, the
fantastic.
Best part is when you have a sea of people out here, because mm-hmm. we could see from the mezzanine, you see a sea of people,
yep.
and you get a call in and they'd say it's at Larkin and McAllister. You're like,
you know, be slightly more specific.
Yeah, exactly.
You see the tall guy at the top there who's exactly. wearing the rainbow wig? Yeah. We're two people next. Now
the one
we're
with
not.
The giant
we're
even shirt further on. Down
the
road.
Yeah. The guy with the giant shirt on, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was too funny.
The kid, the guy with the kid.
And so they'd have to find a way to pull them all in. So a lot mm-hmm. of them had stair chairs or something where they could, you know, they'd do an on-site assessment. Or they had gaiters out there, those little golf
I love
carts.
Those
are great.
Fantastic.
So they'd pull them in, funnel them
Man,
in.
Man, I want to
be
the gator driver. Go on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah. And have a little flag on there.
Yep.
So it was great. It was great for them. It was great for us. And we learned from it. We had done it 2 years ago. This year was much more organized in the field part of it. You know, as usual, the usual things that break down during things like this are communications. So there were some issues with communications, but, mm-hmm. you know, each time you learn and mm-hmm. then you just hope the Giants win the World. Oh, actually, maybe the 49ers this time.
Maybe 49ers. Hey, it's all right. All right.
Another parade and another class.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a great experience.
Getting back to the fact that as you're coming into the fall semester as paramedic students for City College, I think it's pretty unique, at least in the Bay Area, that the class, instead of being for most private schools, paramedic school is a semester long, and then they proceed to their clinicals,
yeah.
and then they go to their preceptorship or their internship. With this school, it's a year-long class, mm-hmm. and then as they come back in the fall, you start intermingling
exactly
the clinical spots,
the
which is so
part.
Much more important
Absolutely.
To space out the knowledge learning. The didactic, and then to be able to start applying it.
Exactly.
You know, and go through your steps and see the things that you're actually learning in class.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Winky Bach for the first time and going, this is it, right? This
yeah.
is the guy. And everyone's crowded around this
exactly.
guy's poor monitor, you know, and they're looking. He's asking, what
serves,
are you all looking at?
Yeah, and it serves everyone because they come back to the class and what do they do? They mm-hmm. talk to their classmates. So it's not just they saw that trauma patient. They actually, everybody in the class eventually sees them because they hear about them. So
right.
it definitely benefits everybody.
Yep.
That and going to trauma video too is another thing. We go to the trauma rounds at San Francisco General where they get to hear the physicians argue about the same things that, you know, we talk about in class, when to see spine and when not to,
right.
you know, IO or IV. You know, they get to hear that some of these things are just not that decisive and not that black and white. There's definitely...
There's gray area in it, and yep. it's almost like they've taken away for EMTs and paramedics a lot of the thinking behind C-spining, mm-hmm. and because I've had
yeah,
big debates on that myself, but that's for another
yeah.
episode altogether. But you know, when do we really need to do it? When is it yeah. not important, and the patient's actually suffering because it's taking
exactly.
too much time to get them in it? So what's the appropriate time to do it? But then again, then people think you're callous and that you don't really mm-hmm. need it. And there's every that once in a while there might
yeah.
be that situation where it's necessary.
Yeah.
But we'll figure that out. I do want to ask you about what got you into being first a paramedic, EMT, and then a teacher.
Oh, that's
give me the whole yeah. life story.
I love asking this question to students because everyone's got a different angle. But for me, it was when my dad had a heart transplant when I was 18. He died about 45 days later.
Oh.
And while I was there, and I had been a theater arts major, which,
mm-hmm.
by the way, came in handy later as a teacher.
Of course. Where were you going to school?
San Francisco State.
Okay.
Yeah. And I that's what I had done all through, you know, high school. And I thought, you know, I'm going to win an Oscar one of these days.
Okay.
So
yeah,
maybe an Emmy.
Yeah. Maybe an Emmy. Maybe a podcasting.
Maybe a podcasting.
What the hell do they have for podcasting at you?
Ooh, that's something to start.
That's right. Now, you want water? We got water there, too.
Oh, answer. Thanks.
Okay.
I went to, we were at Stanford when my dad had his heart transplant, uh-huh. and the ICU nurses were just amazing. So
really?
We, you know, and so I thought, you know, I'd always liked science. I'd always done well in science, especially physiology and things like that. So
yeah.
I went back to school and said, I think I'm going to change my major to nursing. And I took a physiology class, and my physiology professor said, oh, no, you're going to change your major to physiology.
Oh, really?
Because I loved the lab. And uh-huh. he said, this is it. You're going to change your major here. That way you can decide later if you want to go to nursing or med school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, you know, I'm taking all these science classes, and I have no idea if I could even perform with a patient. So I looked up paramedic, because nobody knew what an EMT was. I think now it's probably a little better, but then you say EMT, people say, what? So I looked up paramedic.
Well, they think EMT is paramedic.
Exactly. Yeah. And I saw John Adams. So I picked up the phone and called out, and they said, well, you have to be an EMT before you're a paramedic. I said, okay, what's an EMT? And that was it. And then I started. I was in Mary's class.
Mm-hmm. This is why you're going to college?
Experience. And then I was, this is why I took that path. At the same time, I stayed in college and got my physiology degree and got my paramedic license, went on to paramedic after. I got a job in first as an EMT in Oakland at Allied Ambulance, and then continued and went on to paramedic school, but also got my, then went on also to graduate school in physiology, because mm-hmm. I was thinking, okay, maybe I want to study a little bit about what we do out here, and kind of followed two paths, went to graduate school, got my master's in physiology, and then
bam,
paramedic, and started working in the city after working in Oakland.
Holy cow. So you're going to school, EMT,
yep,
which is, I mean, it's possible to do. It's a little yep. more difficult, but
yeah.
the job is set up so that you could actually go to school
yep.
while you're going to work, too.
Yeah. And then I worked at the old clam house, too, which was
all right.
a great, great weekend
Wait,
job.
Hold up. Where's this now? Where do you...
The old clam house in the city. It's the second uh-huh. oldest restaurant in the city.
All right.
And I worked on like Friday nights and Saturday nights for sometimes Sundays when Giants games, and great extra money. Restaurant work is and bar work is great extra
I
money.
I know it, man. I
so
wish I did it.
When people say, God, I don't make enough as an EMT, I always say, you know, work two nights a week at a bar somewhere or a restaurant for tips and whatever else. It'll help you at least
mm-hmm.
do what you want to do. Great work to support
mm-hmm.
what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Didn't you work in San Francisco as a paramedic?
Paramedic,
too?
Yeah. I worked at the health department at the time.
That's what I thought.
And then we went through the merger with the fire department.
Yeah.
So I worked with the health department, and then my master's degree came in handy because I started working with UCSF on some of the research we were doing at the time on seizures and strokes. There was an NIH funded trial, and we did it.
Wow.
I
remember you
yeah.
talking about that.
That
was
great.
Doing seizure trials, too.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you were just. You didn't know if you were actually giving. It's a double blind.
It was a, yeah, it was a.
Triple blind?
And we always call it triple blind, yeah, because
yeah.
the, you know, the people giving it didn't know it. Obviously, the patient didn't know it. But neither did the people evaluating the data had no idea which drug. The only one was like this, the key master, who was
yeah.
the guy in yeah. pharmacology at UC had like the master key in a safe of to what the drugs were. And we never opened it until we actually analyzed the data.
Yeah.
So we analyzed it, said, okay, this drug, A, B, and C was all we knew. This one looked like these patients did better, whatever. And then we unblinded the whole thing. So
mm-hmm. And it turned out to be
really
Pepsi.
Really interesting. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
RC Cola.
Bud Light.
Yeah. I would never guess. Febreze. Yeah, this podcast brought to you by Febreze. It's just bizarre, though, the whole idea of studies like that, where it, maybe one of them is even a placebo, you don't,
yeah,
you know,
that
which
one
is
was,
scary when you're
yeah.
dealing with somebody who's an active seizure there in status as
That
manager.
Was definitely a study that will never get repeated because of the ethics.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the Milgram experiments in the 60s.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not, so, gonna be, not legally anyway. I'm sure it's going on all the time
yeah,
someplace.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what we used to say was, you know, we everyone worries about being research, you know, if you're a research subject, or you're a guinea pig, but you're actually a guinea pig under regular practice, especially practice that's not supported by research. And then once you do the study, you're actually under really tight, you know, control and
right.
care, really tight care. So it's kind of interesting that mentality that, well, I'm a guinea pig. It's like, yeah, actually, if we have to study it, you were a guinea pig under the regular practice.
Right, right. That's a good point, yeah. And we're bouncing all around here, but it's okay. We can cut it all together.
That's a conversation with me. Sorry.
Right. That's great.
That's what it's
that's
like
great.
To talk to me.
We should,
all over the place.
Yeah. Great. Well, then I should just, so paramedic, after that you go clinical, you do your clinicals, you're still doing didactic for City
yeah.
College, and then you pass, if you do or not, you pass the class.
Yeah. We have a final written exam.
Final written exam.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, if you pass... The next step is after you finish didactic and clinicals, you do...
It's your internship.
Okay.
Yeah. And the clinicals, the internship decision-making is real different, too. I do a lot of collaborating with the clinicals, preceptors, and then also I talk to people who are going to potentially be the person's preceptor, and we try to overlap. Because the worst thing you could have is a gap. I hate gaps, so... We've got it, and I always tell the students, momentum. You need momentum. Hold the momentum, because that's key.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's what we try to do, is overlap some of those. So if they can get ride-alongs with their potential preceptor during their clinicals, that's ideal.
Yeah, you really push for that, and ended up getting that going, too. I think I did two ride-alongs with Steve Takamoto.
He was awesome.
Yeah, and then I stopped and then went and finished my last two clinicals, and then... Boom, right in the next Monday with him starting.
He retired, right?
He's out about 2 or 3 years
that's
now.
That's a huge loss.
I miss him.
Yeah.
He was an asset, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in so many ways.
Oh, man. He was great.
He was DPH. When I came to DPH, he was a DPH. I loved working with him. He was wonderful.
What were those days like?
Oh, that was really...
give me one snapshot, because I'm sure everybody else I talk to is going to have a better and a funny depiction of it.
Well, it's one of those, which snapshot do I want to give you? it was hard to adjust. You come in, you know, kind of young and from a different system, and you end up, and you have a lot of people from various different fire departments coming in to work per diem. Most people were per diem. Mm. And then you have the Agers, the husband and wife team that are full-timers, and you got all these other kind of, it was a transition. So you could feel the old guard.
Oh, right.
You could feel the old guard from when it was before there were paramedics.
Like
still
beginning
around.
Medics. Oh, like, yeah. Vietnam vets coming back, like that group kind of filtering off.
Exactly. And there was the big key was, you know, people always talk about volume and things like that. That was 3 ambulances after midnight routinely. And
in San Francisco, just covering the entire
city. Yep.
Yeah.
And
okay. Yeah. That was perfectly
dispatch
sensible.
Had a line of code twos. You could put them in a queue. You didn't have to send them out.
Right.
Just sit there. You got to earn your way up to code three.
You got to earn your way up. When they don't call back after an hour, maybe it is a code three, or do you just scrap it and say, done with that one?
Yep. It was that was it in a nutshell.
That's great. Yeah.
It was great.
I remember you telling us that you, when you were working there, then you, when you were pregnant, you just worked dispatch.
Yeah,
I could
exactly.
just picture you, just big pregnant woman bouncing around in the dispatch room. Yeah. And you it wasn't digital. There was nothing on computer. You just slid around blocks and you said, this ambulance is sitting.
Yeah,
general.
Magnets. We had a magnet board.
Yeah,
and they used to
board.
Call it work in the books. And people would say, hey, you work in the books, because it was a big book. And then we went to computer, and there was
which
people
was,
not too happy about
it. It didn't go too seamlessly, huh?
It was one of those computers that looked like you could play Pong on it, too.
Yeah.
You know?
You're typing in DOS.
Yeah, exactly. You had to know symbols. Yeah.
You got a ColecoVision controller. Trying to figure out how to get the ambulance across the next city.
Yeah. Yeah, and the dispatch center was down at 50 Ivy, which is now 50 Lech Walesa, at the Waddell Clinic. So you had to come in, step over some people in the hallway, and go into the little room in the back. And at nighttime, if you couldn't get in, seriously, I'm totally serious about this, you had to go, if you went in and parked in the garage, you couldn't get upstairs. So you had to go and push this... like this trap door open and climb in through this duct to the staircase to get upstairs. So 8 months pregnant, that was not easy.
It's a little confined space.
Not easy.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But that's part of the joy of working there. I think,
it was
the
common
there.
Sense. People just operated on common sense. It was like, this is what it is. We just deal with it. We go. There's, you know, common sense.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what you're talking about with a lot of the students that get out in the field that were really good in didactic, really know the information, physiology, pathophysiology, and they get out there and it's, where's the common sense?
Exactly. I actually write that on narratives too. This person is loaded with common sense, which means
they can think their way around.
They can
get the way out of the box. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Troubleshooting is a huge feature of being a paramedic or an EMT.
And that's the first half of the interview with Megan Corey. Tune in soon. Come back to the site. Find the second half. Thanks for listening. This is Ken Allen. Cheers.